I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
You're now listening to the California Golden Bearcast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This episode is brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. And welcome to another episode of the Golden Bearcast, a podcast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We're going through our opponent series previews, whatever you may call it. And as you've probably seen with the title, we're going over the Washington Huskies. And today, joining me is from the UW Dog Pound, is Gabby. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I feel I feel obliged to correct you, even though that's like super annoying that it's actually pronounced Gabby.
Gabby,
now
okay.
That's everyone's first impression of me.
Don't worry,
I won't hate if you call me that because I know it's easy.
I apologize for the first round, but we will not ever get that wrong ever again. Ever again.
It's reasonable. I've had people who know me for years slip it sometimes.
Well, I appreciate your understanding.
It's good.
So we're here. We're going to talk about the Washington Huskies, which for some reason, there's a lot of ties with the Cal program with the Huskies as well. Our starting quarterback, Chase Garbers' younger brother, is at UW vying for a starting quarterback position. Our defensive coordinator's nephew is also vying for the starting quarterback position. And of course, our tight end is coach is Tuiasa Sopo, who is a really, really legendary quarterback up there at UW. So,
and Wilcox really was, Wilcox coached with us for a while. And I remember even back to the Garbers connection, like before Jake Haener, esteemed Fresno quarterback Jake Haener committed to UW. We all thought like, oh, Garbers is going to be our one for 2017, but he's been fun to watch down there with you guys. So,
a lot of ties, but we're going to talk about the Husky side of things today. So let's get started with the real broad stuff, which is the coaching stuff. You guys had, some coaching changes this offseason with Coach Pete moving on. Then he leaves behind Jimmy Lake, who gets bumped up into the head coaching spot. And then he comes on and replaces, I think, the entire offensive side of the ball, if I'm not mistaken.
Not all of it. He replaced, so Scott Huff, who's our offensive line coach, Keith Benafa, and Junior Adams, our receiver coach, are still there. He replaced Bush Hamden, who's now, I think, quarterback coach at Missouri, with John Donovan, the new OC, who I assume we're going to be talking about. And tight ends coach was Jordan Pau, who is, I think now he's at UNLV. Now our tight ends coach is Durham Cato, but those are the main offensive changes, unless I'm spacing out and forgetting one. But those are the other three: the OL, running backs, and receivers coaches are all the same.
Got it. So let's talk about your new OC. What are you expecting from him? Are you expecting some big changes from a schematic standpoint going into this season? What's your take on that?
Yeah, this was really a funky. It would kind of, after the whole hiring process of where there was multiple times where the internet rumors or whatever you want to call it, were thinking like, oh, or even like sources of varying credibility from, who claimed to have sources within the program were saying like, oh yeah, this is all done deal. So there's, I think that various times, like Rhett Lashley, who's now with Miami, I think he was SMU, like he was, theoretically they were hunting for him, and then they were hunting for a few other guys who I've since flung far from my brain. But people who you're like relatively can get kind of excited about. And then they hired John Donovan after. Oh, and then like Kellen Moore, you know,
yes,
was like the big one at Dallas. And reportedly it came down to Dallas just offering him, can I swear on this, a shitload of money. But, you know,
college teams mostly can't afford. Yep.
Yeah. That's a scientific unit. But, and yeah, with him being like a Chris Peterson legend, you know, legend. And then that didn't happen. So then that hire of John Donovan, after many weeks of doing a very diligent job, it looked like, was kind of a deflating hire. And so, but that being said, when we like, for example, we've talked to Ty Jones, the receiver at UW, and there have been genuinely players who have, or significant implications that one of the main issues with Peterson's system has been not fixed, but has been upgraded theoretically. Primarily that being that it was said to have been quite complicated. And when you see how, for example, receivers had difficulty, even no matter what their talent level was, coming out of high school, playing right away or making the correct, you know, doing what they're supposed to do. So there became this thought that maybe the system is preventing the talent that now UW is getting that they didn't have in the past from being able to play and contribute right away. And so that the John Donovan coming in, I don't think it's going to be that significantly different of a system. It's still supposed to be pretty versatile, pretty balanced. I hate using the term like multiple because it's such a cliche and there's no way to interpret that really. You know, pro style, multiple, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the reports coming out of camp, which have been super tightly leaked, have seemed to corroborate that. You know, we have in the past, you wouldn't hear that much about freshman receivers, or you would hear about like they're flashing, but they aren't, you know, that making huge impacts. And then during the season, you would see that, yeah, they're not going to play that much, except for last year with Puka Nacua, who came on as a true freshman before breaking his leg or something. But yeah, so you're hearing a lot more about, for example, Romo Dinze, who's a true freshman from Bishop Gorman, and Jalen McMillan, who is from Fresno, and also, you know, very highly rated receivers. So I think it's not going to be too different, just simplified. Whether that is something we see on the field or if it's just verbiage or less motions pre-snap, you know, who knows? But everything that's been said has seemed to imply that it's not going to be, you know, we're not Mike Leach now or Nick Rolovich for that matter. We're not.
Well, I mean, that's very interesting. I mean, I've been talking to all of the other Pac-12 schools, Pac-12 North schools, and it seems all of us are replacing offensive coordinators. So, like, and that plus at least the big four ones are, and we're mostly replacing quarterbacks too. And then on top of that, none of us can go to practice or watch any of this. Yeah. So we have no idea what's going on. So it's pretty interesting just to hear everyone's take on that. But let's dive into the offense a little bit. I guess the big question, of course, is at quarterback, right? You have Jimmy Lake coming out earlier this week saying that you might see three quarterbacks play against Cal. Most fans are like, that sounds fun. But at the same time, if you've watched enough college football, you know, if you don't have one good quarterback, you usually don't have three. What are you thinking from the quarterback spot?
Yeah, that's another. Well, I'm trying to convince the world that I have a revolutionary seven quarterback system.
Awesome.
It hasn't caught on, but, you know, we're trying. But that's another thing that has been just so many different little mini, like micro leaks almost coming out where someone who claims to have sources is like, yeah, someone yesterday or today or whatever said, like, it's down between Thompson and Morris. And then someone else was like, no, I heard it's Sermon or whatever. And like the only thing we know pretty much for sure is that Garbers Jr. probably isn't going to, or not probably, almost certainly isn't going to be the one, which if he, I almost wish this was happening a year from now because his skill set I find really, really intriguing compared to all of them. Although they all for what it's worth, all four of those guys are very different. I think Occam's razor would suggest that it's probably with a very lowercase p, probably Thompson, who's the grad transfer from Sacramento mm-hmm. State, who's a Washington native from Auburn. Based on like the Twitter clips that they show, it's probably 50% Thompson, and then, or 40% Thompson, and then the rest are split mostly between Morris and Sermon. It really, me and the other UW DP writers today were coming up with this theory that, and by all of us, I mean mostly me and the other guys, were like, you need to shut up, this is stupid. that Jimmy Lake is just, A, he's trolling all of us at this point, which is corroborated by, he posted a tweet yesterday about their final score scrimmage, that it was 59-52, and then a half hour later came out and was like, just kidding, it was a 24-20 or
goodness,
something. So I'm convinced that he's just effing with us, and it's going to be, I don't know. I really wish I could say, I think it'll probably be Thompson. He has the, you know, he's the only one with a lot of experience, and he's the most mobile of the three. And with us breaking in three new offensive linemen, even if it's a high talent level and a decently high level of experience on the offensive line, even though there's three new starters, you know, that mobility always comes in handy. Morris is kind of like a slightly stronger arm Jake Browning, as far as physical skill set and mental acuity and accuracy, which is what, you know, Browning was supposed to, was renowned for. And then Sermon is kind of like just that prototypical pro style, huge quarterback who can throw it 500 yards on one throw off of his back foot running to the left. But it's a matter of, you know, whether or not he can do all the other things. So yeah, I guess I would go with probably Thompson, but in the end, it's just, my answer is just a giant shrug emoji. So.
Well, okay. We're going to have to take your word as it is.
I wish I could be more helpful. All you UW fans wish that we could have give you a better answer.
Yeah. I mean, don't worry about it. I mean, we had that issue when we played for the avid college football fan remembers when we played Northwestern a few years ago, and Pat Fitzgerald got upset at us because apparently the bloggers did a good job of keeping quiet that we were going to play a two quarterback system. And we didn't leak it.
That's
so
really
he blamed CGB at that, basically he was blaming CGB. So you know,
I love that so much. Was that Ross Bowers and Chase Garbers?
That was Jared Goff and Luke Rubenzer.
Oh, right. Okay, so that was,
that was a generation ago, yeah. I guess, quote unquote. So
back to the Bear Raids.
Yeah, back to Sunny Dykes. Whew, okay, don't want to talk about those lasting nightmares, but yeah. We'll move on to that. Yeah, exactly. I guess we'll talk about the tailbacks a little bit. You guys had Salvin Ahmad, who was 1,000-yard rusher, 11 mm-hmm. touchdowns rushing. I'm looking at the roster. He's no longer on the roster.
Mm-hmm. No, he's in Miami Dolphins.
Okay, yeah, so he's in the NFL, of course. Yeah. that's a big gap there. But assuming you guys, of course, have the talent, who do you think is going to fill in that role? Do you expect them to lean on the running back a lot more because it's a new quarterback coming in as well?
Yeah, so the thing with our running backs is that I think Myles Gaskin was so the mm-hmm. guy for 3.5 years there that people, you know, you just get used to that. And then you realize that once he goes, you're like, oh, right, that's not how most running back teams work, especially not in college. Well, but
depends on the school, but yeah.
Depends on the, yeah, but yeah, maybe Wisconsin. But but last year, I mean, Savon Ahmed was obviously, he was ostensibly the number one, but they ran it a lot by committee, and so much of it was that they all had different skill sets. The three that they kind of rotated between last year, where Ahmed was, he was a more electric athlete than Myles Gaskin, even, I mean, easily, with the ball in space and everything. Like he had that 97-yard run or touchdown run against USC last year, that where you really see it in action, and it's mm-hmm. he kind of had that holy shit factor. And then the other two who are returning is Richard Newton, who's a huge, he was a redshirt freshman last year. And you see when he runs that he's not the kind of guy who anyone with any brain would want to try to tackle. And he also, for what it's worth, Gaskin, I just like everyone, I hate the Wildcat. I assume you hate the Wildcat. Everybody hates the Wildcat. And then Miles Gaskin came along and was actually really, really good at operating the Wildcat. And then occasionally we would see, like when he was out the year before against Oregon, we saw them UW do the Wildcat or attempt the Wildcat with, I think, Sean McGrew, or maybe it was Kamari Pleasant. And it was terrible. And so once Gaskin left, we were like, all right, no more Wildcat. It turns out Richard Newton is actually quite good at Wildcat too. A lot of that being that he can fall forward like Miles Gaskin can. He's going to break you. And he also kind of has that patience that Ahmed didn't necessarily. It wasn't natural to Ahmed. Not that he didn't get better at that as he was here. But yeah, so I think Newton ostensibly this year, you could say, is number one until proven otherwise. But really it is a trio of him being that big kind of bruiser. Sean McGrew, who is a senior scat back. He is generously listed at, I think, 5'7 on the roster. I've walked right next to him a couple times, and I'm like 5'7.8 or whatever. He is not 0.8 inches shorter than me. he is not a big dude. But he's gotten much better at utilizing that low center of gravity over the years. So he can definitely get yards after contact much better than you'd expect from someone that size. And he's also really fast. And then the wild card, who is also, I would argue, by far the most complete back, is Cam Davis, who's from Southern California somewhere. He's not as much of a just huge kind of brute as Richard Newton, as far as just being able to totally run through guys and make them hate their life. But he can definitely, you watch his high school film and you see the few snaps he got last year, and he definitely can, his yards after contact are very much, that's very much a thing that he brings to the table. And I think he's also just a faster back than Newton. So I think I wouldn't be shocked if by the end of the year he became the number one-ish. But I think you're going to see a pretty healthy rotation between those three. And then there's two true freshmen who are interesting, but I don't think we're going to see that much of them.
Yeah, I mean, the Sam Adams the second, I think, is the one name. Yeah,
yeah, and JV on Sunday, who, even though Adams is local and Sunday's from Texas, I think Sunday I'm excited to watch him in the next few years. But
I mean, that's a loaded room that has a lot of talent moving forward, too.
Yeah.
But let's move on to the passing game. Let's talk about the tight ends and the wide receivers. The wide receivers, of course, some very big names there, some talented guys there. You guys but have also lost a few. Same with the tight end room. Mm-hmm. You know, Hunter Bryant was, you know, the big name there at tight end. And so, yeah. So you guys have some, you know, talent and five-star talent at that. Let's talk about the wide receivers first, and then we'll move on to the tight ends.
Yeah.
What are you expecting from that group? I guess Puka is probably the big name out of that group, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, obviously, as you mentioned, we lost Aaron Fuller and Andre Bocelli and Quinton Pounds. But as the year went on, Bynum and Puka, until he broke his...
Mm-hmm.
Was it his ankle? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Something
to keep him out. Lower leg.
Yes.
Clearly, and Spiker to an extent, even though he didn't see that many snaps, we're still like clearly better than them. And you kind of started to see that in the snap count and in how much they were targeted, especially in Bynum's case, as the season evolved last year. So I think those three guys are kind of the last relics of Brent Pease, who was our old receivers coach before Bush Hamden, and then before Junior Adams, and Matt Lubick, who sucked. Matt Lubick was terrible. But so you, the thing with Pease is that he just couldn't recruit or didn't want to recruit. I don't know. So you, there was a significant talent upgrade from 2014, 15, 16 to 2017 classes, which is where Bynum and Ty Jones, who's another presumable starter, who was out for most of last year being injured, is so. Those three guys leave. For one, Pounds didn't really, he wasn't a consistent contributor anyway. But that doesn't make that much of an impact. And looking at the receivers this year, it's clearly a much better room. They're in a much better position to actually make plays. Fuller, I always had ambivalent feelings about because I felt like he was kind of put in a very tough position to succeed. I felt like he could have been a very reliable kind of third option as far as just a possession receiver, but putting him the last couple of years in a scenario where he had to be the number one guy just because we didn't have anyone else. And this goes back to Pete's system theoretically being too complicated to get guys who at the time were true freshmen like Marcus Spiker or Austin Osborne, but were very talented on the field. Which kind of forced Fuller to play a game that he wasn't equipped to play. He, you know, wasn't necessarily the best at making contested catches nor at getting super great separation. And because he was our de facto number one, if people have to focus on you and those aren't necessarily your skill sets, you're not really put in a great position to succeed. So, and then Bocelli was fast, but not neither of those guys were going to break tackles or get many yards after catch, period, like at all. That's not really going to be a problem this year. When you look at these guys' skill sets, just there. And also, for what it's worth, you know, Hart is great, but at a certain point, having a height limit of 5'11 versus having a room of guys who are 6 feet to 6'3. Like, I'm not going to pretend that doesn't make a difference. The receiver room this year is just much bigger, much more talented, much stronger. So that's a room that I'm really excited to watch. I think there's been some rumors about Puka being hurt in camp. Whether or not the severity of that has been debated on the internet, capital T, capital I. But I don't think it's anything to be super worried about. Maybe I wouldn't be really shocked if they limit his snaps against Cal or whatever. If maybe he doesn't play, I'm not sure. But I think what you're looking at right now is Terrell Bynum being kind of the possession guy. He ended up being more and more reliable as the season went on last year. And I think that's, the trajectory will continue. And then Ty Jones is a huge catch radius. He's 6'4". He's really lanky. He was out most of last year with an injury, but he played as a true freshman, which is really rare for receivers in the past. And then for most of his sophomore year until I think that was when he got injured. But he's been someone who's worth watching. And then the presumable third, if he's healthy, is Puka, who's super exciting to watch. He's not necessarily the fastest guy, but he's a really good route runner and really strong, and is going to run through people and around people and find soft spots in zones. If there's a true freshman to watch also, it'd be definitely Roma Dunze, who is kind of built similar to Puka and has a similar skill set, but is also faster. And then there's also, very much more talented two deeps there than we've had in the past bajillion years, with Austin Osborne and Marcus Spiker, who Spiker's also, it's been said, is injured right now. And then Jalen McMillan, the true freshman, and who's an All-American. I think he's like a 0.97 on 24/7. He still has to put on weight, I think, to be a consistent contributor. Those rating systems are really great on a macro level, and they are helpful on a micro level, but they don't, when you look at them without context, they don't tell you everything. So he is really good. He's going to be really, really good over his career. But I think Romo Dunze, even though he was slightly less highly rated, is more, his skill set and his physical ability right now is more in a position to contribute a lot more often versus McMillan. But I think you're still going to see McMillan on the field.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm looking at your roster and Rome's listed at 6'3", 205 compared to McMillan's 6'1", 185. Like that's 6'3", 205. That's terrifying.
Yeah. That's and he ran like his 3 cone and his 40 yard was like 4 or 5, which isn't burner, but when you're
that big,
it's pretty average, yeah. A little bit faster than average for a receiver. But when you're that big, I think that's about average for a receiver, but at 6'3", you know, And then the real, real big thing though, is his agility is kind of off the charts. It's exciting. And he's just strong.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of Calvin Johnsons or Julio Joneses that's going to be walking through doors is very limited.
yeah. As much as I'd love to get DK Metcalf on the Huskies.
Exactly. Let's talk about the tight ends a little bit. It's a big part of, I think, a lot of, you know, the multiple offenses. Let's talk about that group. Tell me who you're looking out for, who you think is going to make a bigger impact this upcoming season.
Yeah, definitely the unquestionable leader of that group is Cade Otton. Him and Hunter Bryant were a really fun duo last year in that they just have totally different skill sets. Obviously, Hunter's an electric athlete, and Cade Otton is not. I mean, no one is Hunter Bryant, but also if no one's asking him to be, he's much more of a kind of NFL prototype tight end. He's what I want to say like 6'5", 250-ish, but he is a really good blocker. He's a really reliable, outlet valve and pass catcher, even though he's not going to do anything that Hunter Bryant is ever going to do. I think he's probably going to leave. I would be pretty surprised if he didn't leave early after this year and get drafted with a pretty decent position. And then behind him, normally we would have had Jacob Kaiser, who isn't really that much of a deal in the passing game, but he's just a really reliable blocker, both in the run and pass. But what's interesting then is that there's a decent amount behind, or it's not super crazy depth, but you still have people who have been around for let's wait for that. can you cut this out?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wish I remembered where in that sentence I was. I'll start the sentence over about.
You're just talking about the youth and the depth behind them, right? Yeah.
While we're at it, I just spaced out and forgot. Okay, the phone's been ringing. One moment. So behind Cade Otton, you have a combination of people. You have Devin Culp, who's going to be a redshirt sophomore, and Jack Westover, who will also be a redshirt sophomore, who was a walk-on, who was just given a scholarship. And Westover is kind of turned into a pretty versatile, he lines up at H-back a lot, but towards the end of the year, it kind of reminded me of, I don't know how much you watched like the Seahawks or whatever, but it kind of reminded me of that, where they kept getting tight ends injured and they just pull one out of their ass. And then by the end of the year, like they had Jacob Hollister, who no one at the beginning of the year was like, oh yeah, Jacob Hollister, what a star. And that kind of was Jack Westover, except for we didn't have the injuries that forced him to be, they pulled him out and we're like, who's this? Okay. I guess he's good. So he's a good blocker and you know, not a freak athlete or anything, but he caught a touchdown at least last year and had some receptions. And then Devin Culp, who took a little bit, I think, to get acclimated because he ran, I think, a wing tee in high school over in Spokane. There's a lot of work from going from that to become a more complete tight end in college. But he's shown up, it sounds like, pretty decently in practice this year. I wouldn't be surprised, especially now with Bryant gone and Kaiser out, to see him a lot more. And then the other guy who's probably going to come into play is Mark Redman, who is Chase Garber's little brother's high school teammate, a true freshman, who's really exciting. He is kind of built like he's like a bigger version of Kate Otten at the same point in their careers, and also more athletic and just really exciting. So when you see, yeah, when you see what UW's done with tight ends like Will Disley and Drew Sample, who are all in the NFL, and Kate Otten, who will be soon, and then you see Mark Redman, and he's like a better version of them at the same points in their career. So you're like, okay, yeah, please give me that. So
can't go wrong with more good tight ends.
I think most plays, most snaps, you'll see at least a tight end on the field, and sometimes, you know, 12 personnel with two tight ends. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that'll be interesting because there's a decent amount of young guys who have minimal experience, but not no experience, except for Redman. So.
All right. Well, long talk on the offense. Let's
I did not mean to go that.
It is perfectly fine.
About, like, every single player.
The more information we have, the better. So let's skip over to the defensive side of the ball. Let's talk about the front seven. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys last season, I believe, defensively gave up 19.4 points per game. That's best for 15th in the country. Mm-hmm. Defensively, I think gave up, what is it? You averaged one touchdown per game passing allowed and 1.2 touchdowns rushing allowed. Pretty stellar, right? But the only thing is the turnover numbers weren't as strong. Run me through the front seven. What are you expecting from that group moving on into 2020 and just like the other groups? The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. That is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned that we weren't terrible last year, because last year, the defense, as a Husky fan, what we've grown used to, last year felt like the defense was it wasn't a failure or anything, but it just felt so much worse than we were used to. Like,
just
so
not up
much
to par.
Worse. Yeah, and I think not only most of it, but not almost all of that really felt like it came down to the inside linebackers. I can't say all, but the inside linebackers last year were pretty terrible. At least when you're looking at the starters of Brandon Wellington and Kyler Manu. And I hate saying that about college kids because, they really were clearly a step below the rest of the units. So if we're looking at the front seven this year, though, the inside linebackers are obviously they're still very young now that those two graduated. But what we saw last year with the red at the time redshirt freshmen, now redshirt sophomores, especially Eddie Ulufoshio, was that there's like definitely something to work with. I think Ulufoshio, for what it's worth, is clearly going to be one of the starters there. He's much quicker, much better instincts than what we had for much of last year. And as the year went on, he played a lot more. And then the wild cards on the right, I think probably Jackson Sermon will probably end up Peter Sermon's son, will probably start the season as the starter over there. He's definitely more of a thumper. Not necessarily he's not complete as a player yet. I mean, at least he wasn't last year. I think as far as, especially in passing, like what are words in the passing game? I think he had work to do, but he was still an improvement over Kyler Manu and Brandon Wellington. And then MJ Tafisi as well is definitely like Thump City. He's going to hit hard. And I think the redshirt freshmen this year are kind of the other wild card, but also a talent upgrade. If the 2018 class, recruiting class inside linebacker, was an upgrade over what we had before, then the 2019 is an upgrade over them there. I think who we're most likely to see from that is probably Daniel Haimuli, who I wouldn't be surprised if Sermon looks like what he did last year, I wouldn't be surprised to see Haimuli overtake him as a starter, but they rotate a lot in those positions anyway. Haimuli's just, he's not, I think situationally it would make sense more to have Sermon in if, you know, it's, going to be halfback dive or some run up the gut. Like you want to have him versus Haimuli, but I think Haimuli, he doesn't hit as hard necessarily from what we've seen. But he's, I think, quicker on his feet and probably has, my gut would be that he'll probably have better instincts as far as in the passing game. And then there's obviously other guys, but I'm not going to go into every single one I did. I guess the other redshirt freshman that you're most likely to see alongside them is probably Alfonso Tupuutala, also a in-state guy. But then with the defensive line and the outside linebackers, obviously we lost. Those were our two opt-outs from this year who are going to the NFL, which is Levi Onsarike, who was kind of a three technique defensive lineman, and Joe Tryon, who was a physical freak outside linebacker. He's like 6'5", 260, and was gifted by the
football gods.
Pretty much. So losing them obviously hurts, but it's not like if we had lost Levi last year, or he wouldn't have been eligible the year before, but whatever, then that would have left the whole defensive line in a very sketchy situation. As it is, it doesn't. The rotation of guys we have there is pretty, it's a lot to work with. It's as young as the defensive or as the inside linebackers, but they had, I would argue, more experience in general to bring in. So you have Josiah Bronson is like the old guy there, but as far as he has a limited ceiling, I think, as an athlete, like good to have around for his leadership and so that you know there's a certain floor there, but he's not going to win you a championship. What will is the guys behind them, Tuli and Taki, who the defensive staff lovingly refer to as the twins. they played a lot. They're redshirt sophomores this year. They played a lot last year. They're kind of a Tuli is kind of more of a, I mean, they're both like could easily both be big two gap guys, like both in the one and zero technique up in the middle. They're built like cannonballs. they're built differently than Levi though. They'll be able to play, of course, where he played definitely. But their natural position is much further on the interior of the line versus Levi, who's the middle of the line or middle in between the interior and the outside linebackers kind of it. even though he was used on the interior a lot, simply out of necessity. But so those guys are really exciting. I think those two and Josiah Bronson are going to be the ones you guys definitely see the most. But then we also, the 2019 class was, there's four defensive linemen that were taken in it who are all really exciting. One of them has retired from football. He was the most, that was Sama Pama, who was the most exciting potential, but also the lowest floor. He was just a massive, massive man. And, but the two that were the most exciting were Jacob Bandez and Fatui Tuitele. And
you shake my head every time I hear the word Jacob Bandez.
Oh yeah. Cause yeah, he was right
there, right there.
I'm so excited for him. He is such an exciting prospect. I think Tuitele was rated slightly higher. But they're also, they have slightly different skill sets. I think Tuitele can play, maybe has a little bit more versatility on where he can play on the line. Bandez is more of just a giant wrecking ball, but I remember watching him and looking at how violent his hands were. You know, oftentimes with guys that are that strong and that just built, you don't really see that refinement at that age. But so I think you'll see a decent amount of those two as well. But I think it's the first three that you'll get. But they Coach Pete rotates those guys, or Coach Pete. This whole he's not there anymore, but this whole staff rotates those guys a lot. And then the outside linebackers, obviously losing Tryon Hurts. There isn't as much depth there as probably in the secondary or the defensive interior. But it's definitely, it's led by another Northern California guy, Jesuit from Laiatu Latu, who honestly at this point in his career is, if you compare him and Joe Tryon at the same point in their career, he's much farther along easily, which makes sense. He was much higher. He had a much higher floor coming out of high school. Joe Tryon was kind of a project who you looked at him and you were like, holy shit, you're going to be good. But like in a while. But yeah, Latu, I mean, he made a lot of plays last year as a true freshman. He's the guy, I suppose, right now. And then also Ryan Bowman across from him, who was a walk-on in 2016, but has been a fixture since his redshirt freshman year. And Bowman's kind of the kind of guy where he's not, like, you're not going to win championships if your team is only Ryan Bowman's. But unless you're Alabama, you're not going to win championships if you don't have some Ryan Bowman's on your team, kind of. He's such an interesting player because he doesn't look at all like his position. He's 6 feet tall, maybe. He's 280 pounds. But he just kind of shows up and is also, you know, definitely one of the leaders of that part of the side of the ball as a redshirt senior. And then Zion ZTF,
yep.
Tupuola-Fatui kind of came on at the end of last year. He was a redshirt freshman last year. I think the first two you're going to see the most of. And then the five-star Savelle Smalls, who that'll be fun. He's you know, I always try to temper my expectations about, you know, highly rated recruits because there's still a massive adjustment. Just because they were five stars doesn't mean they're going to dominate from day one. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him do something. And the reports, what the coaches have said about him coming out of fall camp is that he has, you know, he's not necessarily consistent yet, but they've spoken very highly of him for sure.
Yeah. You can look at his high school tape and you're just like, okay, that guy didn't deserve to play at that level. He already needed to move.
Yeah, stop.
Athletically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop doing that. Stop breaking kids' hearts and dreams of making it to the next level. Yeah. You're already there.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think when you look at all that personnel together, the final result we'll see this year for UW is last year you kind of saw where in the running game it was either someone's going to get stopped at the line of scrimmage or behind it, or they're going to break out a run for 8 yards because it was all on the defensive linemen and the linebackers just didn't have the right instincts and they were too slow and, you know. But I think this year there's much more of a scenario where the defensive interior can kind of do their job and just plug up where they need to plug up and then trust the inside linebackers to kind of come clean stuff up. So I think it won't be kind of as much of an all or nothing scenario as last year. I mean, the inside linebackers are still young, so I could see Cal definitely having a couple good, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 yard runs, but I don't think it's going to dominate like in the past, but last year there was some sequences against other teams where you're like, God damn it. Like, like everyone's doing their job except for you two in the middle. Yeah. So anyways,
well, let's talk about the back end then. Let's talk about the defensive backs. I mean, I think, I know some of my UW friends were just curious about Elijah Molden and whether he would come back to play this year. And I guess he is because he's listed on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So to have your leading tackler back, I'm looking at the stats here, who led the team with interceptions and total tackles, had 5 tackles for a loss last year and 12 passes defended, which is and 3 forced fumbles. So yeah. The dude is an absolute monster on the back end. But I mean, I feel like he's the main star and is going to be how the secondary plays. How he goes, the secondary is going to go, is my outlook on that defensive back scene correct, or am I totally off base?
No, I think that's true to an extent. Yeah. I also think the fact that I didn't realize he was leading the team in tackles last year. Yeah. I think that really nails home just how unreliable the inside linebackers were when you have your nickelback leading and then you're like, okay, that's not happen. Yeah, no, him coming back was great. And also I give Hithloday, who you guys just talked to at Oregon, I give him shit about I think he was salty that Elijah Molden, who's from Lagos, Oswego in Oregon, I think he's salty that Molden picked Washington over Oregon, because I remember talking to them last year before the Oregon game, and Hithloday like over and over being like, Elijah Molden sucks. He's just not good. And I'm like, okay, you need to like, I understand that he's such a reliable analyst in ways that so many people aren't. But I'm like, okay, you are clearly wrong. But he says stuff with such conviction that I am like, I don't know what you're saying, but I feel like I can't contradict you right now, because what am I going to say? No.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that is, but yeah. So I think anyways, yeah, Molden's definitely the star, if there is one, of the secondary, just as far as being the leader. But yeah, so you had Trent McDuffie. I think the thing, if you need to know one thing about the secondary, it's that it's kind of a scenario where you're like, oh, but we want him on the field. Oh, no, we want him on the field, too. We want there's just a lot of people there that are really good at what they do. Molden is kind of the pillar of that. Trent McDuffie was a true freshman last year from St. John Bosco, and he took over. Kyler Gordon was the starting cornerback at the beginning of the year, and then McDuffie, I think, 4 or 5 games in, kind of took it from him, and is really good. It was nice because for the beginning of that year, including the Cal game, because in that final drive, Garber's kind of picked on Gordon a little bit.
Yeah.
And that the first few games, that's something that as a UW fan, you're not accustomed to. You're not accustomed to your secondary just not being locked down kind of most of the time, even if it is a bend, don't break defense, but a lockdown bend, don't break defense. and so having Trent McDuffie come in kind of restored balance. And then on the other side, Keith Taylor, who is he's a senior now. I forgot if he redshirted for a year, but he didn't because
he is listed as a senior.
Yeah, he didn't. He played like 3 games in his freshman year or whatever. So if he was a year younger, he would be a redshirt sophomore or something, but he's someone who's interesting because Elijah Molden has gotten a lot of talk about where he'll be the next Jimmy Lake high draft pick for the secondary. But I think Elijah Molden's ceiling as far as where he's drafted is lower than Keith Taylor is kind of that prototypical really long corner. And he's like 6'3". He's really lanky though. You see him and you're like, your arms are the size of I-90 or the length of like I-90. And and he's just not as consistent as Elijah Molden.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not inconsistent. He's still a really good corner. He's just not like didn't come in and immediately shut stuff down like for example McDuffie did. And then you have Kyler Gordon, who was rotating in still a lot after McDuffie took his spot. And he should play a lot. He'll also probably be used in the return game as well, because he's an absolute freak of an athlete. I think one of the guys at The Athletic, I think it's Bruce Feldman or maybe Stuart Mandel, has their list of like college freaks. And Gordon's been on there for 2 years in a row. He's like, he has something that's like a 46 inch vertical. Like he's
46 feet vertical.
He's crazy. No, yeah, he's a really crazy athlete. And then the two true sophomores at safety, who are Cam Williams and Asa Turner. And Cam started the year, but he had some issues. He had some blown plays, and versus Asa didn't start playing that much until later on in the year last year, but he kind of came once he started, he was with it a little bit faster. But that being said, you know, Williams is still quite, you know, he's still improving a lot. And then interestingly, I think Julius Irvin is kind of a wild card there too. Although he's only at 185 though. I think he used to be a little bit heavier, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him playing at corner either. And Jimmy Lake likes to have versatile defensive backs. So, you know, and then there's a bunch of other guys who I wouldn't be surprised to see almost any of them in that position. I really wouldn't. There's just a lot of guys. And I don't want to go through each one of them name by name right now, because we'll go way too long.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's going to be the same defensive philosophy there as it has been for the full time. I mean, you have Kwiatkowski as the DC again, and he, before Jimmy Lake, you know, they were co-DCs, and then before then, he was just the sole DC, and Lake was the defensive backs coach, and frankly, I think Kwiatkowski calls a better game than Jimmy Lake did, even though they're very similar. It's not that different.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of the same limiting explosive plays and hopefully not sucking at the inside linebackers against the run.
Hopefully the those pass. Guys take that step forward. Yeah. It's all fan bases before first kickoff, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
This is the year before first kickoff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good enough conversation about the defense. Let's I don't want to disclude the special teams or the kickers, because kickers are people too. So let's take a little pit stop with the kickers here. Do you guys have a place kicker controversy or battle there, or is it, do you have a solidified guy?
Not really. So you have Peyton Henry. We kind of have we have two guys who have two different jobs. Tim Horn is the kickoff guy. He did, I think he took all of them as a true freshman last year. He is bigger, and he kicks, I think he had like three kicks that weren't touchbacks. I don't remember exactly, but he's like built like a linebacker. I think the most popular tweet I ever had was, I took a screenshot of like a photo of all the true freshmen last year at their little banquet or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you could just see his delts through the shirt, and it was like, you're a kicker. You're supposed to be a little, yeah. So I think I took a picture of that, circled it, and said like, "Come to Washington, where our kickers will beat up your linemen," or something. And I've never made anything of my own volition that's been more popular than that. So. That's depressing, but yeah, but he's just jacked. It's funny. And then for the actual extra points and field goals and all that, we have Peyton Henry, who's a redshirt junior. He last year, ironically, everyone was freaking out about news about a kicking competition, because as a redshirt freshman the year before, Peyton Henry had been really spotty and he missed the field goal that would have beat Oregon for that game. And so, yeah, that was a whole, but then, you know, next year he came back and totally took it, like seized that mm-hmm. job, and was really, really solid. And, I think that's really impressive for a kicker to do, because it's so mental that being able to improve, like being able to get stronger and get more accurate or whatever, read a defense better if you're a quarterback or something, like that's all palpable stuff that you can do, whatever. But being a kicker and getting better is such a, like, I can't even imagine the mental ability that takes. I'm just,
yeah.
So, yeah, I, you know, I don't have any reason to expect anything else from him this year, but that was a, I don't think I've ever seen a jump for a kicker like that. I can't imagine doing it. So.
Yeah, I tried kicking at Memorial Stadium from the goal line once, and I don't think I reached the crossbar. So.
Yeah, it's so hard. I played rugby for a little bit, and I think now I can drop kick a field goal from like maybe 20 yards, but it's really pushing it, and half the time it'll just go. But that's drop kicking. It's harder. But yeah, I can't. Yeah.
Yeah, you legit have to get on the field. Like, then you realize that the length, like the angles, it's ridiculously far.
Yeah.
And we're like, you should be able to hit anything within 30 yards. Yeah. You're like, you don't realize how far that thing is.
It's insane. Yeah. I think when I was like, I don't know. I think the farthest I would ever have been able to kick it, and I guess you don't have the, like, you probably lose 5 yards with drop kicking versus being able to run and kick.
Right.
Probably be like, but still, maybe 25. And that's really pushing it. Yeah. Anyways, God bless Peyton Henry. God among men.
Yes. Former Cal kicker David C. Wright is listening. David, you are a person and a human being.
I don't know you, but I love you.
Yes. You can add him on Instagram at Costco Grill Dad. Awesome, awesome stuff there.
Oh, that's a fun name.
Yes, he's a grill influencer is what we call him. He like gets sponsored by, you know, grill companies and spices and dry rubs. Like he's doing good stuff.
Man,
highly recommend it.
That's the dream.
That is the dream. I guess that's enough talk about the team. Let's talk about the schedule. Talk about your projections for the upcoming season. Let me just run you through your schedule here. Yeah. November 7th, the Huskies start off here in Memorial Stadium against the Cal Golden Bears. 14th, you guys host Oregon State. The 21st, host Arizona. And then the 27th, you travel to Pullman to play Washington State. December 5th, you host Stanford. And December 12th, you finish off the season at Oregon.
Yeah. This is such an interesting season because the defense will, this is how it is every year for the most part. Although last year was kind of the one closest to being an exception, is that the defense can and presumably will be able to keep them in any game. I think this is so bizarre looking at the schedule right now. It's 6 games for sure. And then there's the 7th one that we don't know who it is. Yeah. I'm so scared of you guys because the last 2 years, like Cal won 2 games that, but
yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to say anything because you guys deserve to win those games. Even more so to an extent, we deserve to lose those games. That Evan Weaver terrorizes me personally. And last year was so bizarre. And
yeah, that
like the circumstances.
I don't think anyone. Yeah.
So I don't want to make a prediction on that because I am more uncomfortable doing that than I am doing anything in the world.
The funniest stat that Avi actually pulled up that I didn't even realize until he told me this is that Chase Garbers now has recorded 2 wins against Washington without throwing a touchdown pass.
Yeah, that kind of sums it up, I think. That really does.
All right.
Yeah. I think the team here that I'm most confident about is Arizona because I have zero respect for Kevin Sumlin as a coach. I think Stanford, I have an interesting prediction that I think if it all depends on the other teams in the Pac-12 North, I think if Oregon, Washington play closer to their ceiling than their floor. Mm-hmm. Wazoo, I'll throw out as a wild card. Who knows? Because they have a higher ceiling with Rolovich, but they have a lower floor with Rolovich. In Oregon State, I think if Oregon and Washington play to their potential, I think Stanford could be fifth in the North. And I'm not saying that to pander to you guys. I genuinely think that. I also wouldn't even be shocked if they're last. Yeah. And I really, I cannot emphasize enough. I also could see them being like second, because it really all just depends on how everyone else plays. I feel the way about Oregon State that you guys, that I felt about Cal like 3 years ago, where I'm like, I don't, you're not going to win the North, but you're not going to just roll over. And I think they could outplay people. So I think I could see, I think if you're just taking the aggregate, I don't want to look at each game by itself. I would say like and two probably for UW. And it really just comes down to if the quarterbacks can not suck. And the, I mean, they're replacing three offensive linemen, but like I said, they're not like people who have had no game experience. But you know, that's still a big deal. So, it comes down to those two things. I want to see Tim Horn lay someone out on a kick return though. We could lose every game. I'd be happy if that happened.
I think that's the hope. Who was I talking to? I think I was talking to, the org guys? I was talking to someone and they were talking about how they had an Australian punter. So do we. We have an Australian punter. Like, yeah, who played professional Australian rules football,
which is different than rugby. I hate it when people call it rugby.
It is different. Yeah,
it's not.
You got to be able to distinguish it.
It's not the same thing. God damn it! Stop calling me people. All right.
I think we're okay. Oh, we're still waiting.
No, three more rings. You can keep this in. You can edit it out.
I think at this point, I'm going to just keep this in.
You should keep this in.
At this point.
If he cuts, why not? Yeah, if he cut out the earlier stuff, someone called me earlier.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a landline because I live in the forest and I don't have cell service.
And there it is. It's gone.
There we go.
It's gone.
And scene. Yeah. Go on. Oh, Australian punters.
Yes.
What were you
talking? I mean, we were just talking about how we wanted all of our Australian punters to just like lay one out after they punt, after they punt the ball, and it's possible. We can all see it. It happen.
Well, that's my main tenet. I've been very vocal about this both on Twitter and in my like UW in my writing. Uh-huh. I think it should be illegal for Americans to punt. we lost our Aussie punter to graduation.
Yeah.
This year, and I remember writing a thing where I was like, "I'm sorry to all of our punters, all two of them. I don't care. I don't care how good you are. Just you're not allowed. Stop."
I think you'll like the stories. We had a rugby player on our roster who walked onto the Cal team as a punter, and he's from England. His name was Harry. And I remember at a practice, they were punting, they were doing punt returns, and he kicked off. And one guy from the sideline, I still to this day do not know which player said this, but he just yells out, "For Queen and Country, Harry," as he punts.
Yeah.
Arguably the greatest moment I've ever witnessed at a Cal football practice.
Yeah, because you guys are the only ones with the varsity rugby. I full disclosure, so I grew up in Washington and grew up a Washington fan. You know, my parents went there and my grandparents went there, blah, blah, blah. But I actually went to UBC up north. And so so you guys were the only, I mean, UBC's main rivals in rugby were Cal and UVic. And I never witnessed us lose to Cal, but I heard tales of it. But it's nice to, I will always kind of love that Cal has that, even if you guys are my enemies, both in football, crew, for UW, and then for rugby for British Columbia. So
that's what we're hoping to bring in Latu, because I know he wanted to play rugby, and you know, we have a pretty good rugby team. So
yeah.
Sad face, tears.
Womp womp.
Pain.
I would cry for you, but I'm not
gonna. Yeah. No need to. Before we wrap up, there's one question I've been asking all the guys that I've been interviewing. It's 2020. The year of craziness, uncertainty, whatever it may be. Granted, I kind of feel like we foresaw this coming with the Washington Cal game last year with the thunderstorms and the insanity which occurred, and which a game did not end until after midnight. But talk about 2020. I'm asking everyone to make just one outlandish, crazy prediction you think is going to happen in the Pac-12 North, because hey, or in the Pac-12, because hey, 2020.
Let's go with, and it, is it like outlandish, but with a chance of becoming true?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, okay. It is 2020, so it is technically in the realm of possibility.
This is very fair. I'm going to go with Oregon State finishes third.
The exact same call that the Oregon guys made. So, really? Wow. That's
well, then it can't be that outlandish then. I talked to Adam about that last time when we did the, when I was on their podcast most recently. I think we both agreed. Yeah. We were like, yeah, Oregon State isn't going to totally suck this year.
Yeah. 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 And I just talked to the Oregon State guy too. They have decent hopes, not high hopes, but cautiously optimistic.
That's so, more fun anyway. Cautious optimism when you've been shitty for so long. Yeah. I'm just like not being bad. I would know. I'm a Mariners fan.
Oh, I am so sorry. I'm an Angels fan, so I kind of agree, but not really. Same. Yeah, it's not the same. But I understand it to it. I maybe understand like 10% of that.
Yeah, there we go. I'll give you that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the pod. For all of the Cal fans listening, if they want to find out about the Huskies, where can they find you? Where can they learn more about UW?
Yeah. So our site, our SB Nation site, is UW Dog Pound. That is spelled DAWG. Mm-hmm. Because just because Georgia thinks that they own that word doesn't mean that it hasn't been the way we've spelled it since, I don't know, since before I was born. And then I am on Twitter at Gaby, not Gabby, which is G-A-B-E-Y, not G-A-B-B-Y. I created that long before Rob accidentally said Gabby.
It is my fault.
We're cool here.
Yeah.
I have Instagram too, but I never post on it. It's Gaby, it's cold outside. It's not interesting.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good name though. That is a very good name.
Yeah. I think my most recent post was from like August. It was me and, since we're barred from the Canadian, from going into Canada, but all my friends live in Canada. So I drove up to the border and had a picnic I think that was the most recent photo I have. So if you want to see like one photo of my really boring life, every 4 months. You can follow me there. You don't have to. I don't care. It's not my Twitter. I mean, Twitter sucks, but my Twitter is more interesting than my Instagram. My pinned tweet is a haiku about leaf blowers.
That's amazing.
That's a pitch.
That's a great sales pitch. Yes. And
thank you.
No better way to end it on that note about a haiku. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it for us on the Golden Bearcast for this episode. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms. And if you're listening to this, then you already found us. So I don't need to spell it out for you. You can find all our written stuff at writeforcalifornia.com, where we have a lot of things planned for the upcoming season. The game week, if you're listening to this this weekend, is only a week away. So we're getting ready for it, folks. It's starting to, yes, as she throws up the the signs. We're getting ready here to go. And that's it for me. And as always, go Bears.
Oh, I was about to say go Bears. No, don't do that.